Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of our podcast. Today we have a special guest, our second special guest of our podcast, which is David. Hi David.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a real honor to have you in our podcast. And I guess before we get into a slew of questions that we have, maybe you can tell us a few things about yourself, how you got into yoga, how long maybe you've gotten into yoga.
it's a long and it's a short answer at the same time. I came into yoga because of injury from dance and sports, basically. And so I was quite young when I started doing my first hatha yoga class. And then I went to music school in Los Angeles, practiced there. And then I moved back to Stockholm after 4.5 years and took a while before I took up yoga again because I had to do some other stuff in between. But yeah, so it's been in my life for a long time. Yeah.
So quite a bit there, quite a bit of an experience, right?
Yeah.
I was just curious to know whether, you know, ever since you started and mm-hmm. you say your motive or your primary motivation was to finding or to exploring alternative forms of healing. How has your yoga journey been so far? Has it been completely pain-free, completely injury-free? Do you have some insights to share about that?
In general, I would say so. Because of my sports background and dancing and all that, I kind of feel like I did a lot of injury growing up. And by the time I was in my late teens, I had learned to really kind of listen to my body, I would say. So I think already there, I had kind of laid down the foundation for listening inward. So you know, it was track and field, it was gymnastic, you know, it was ice hockey, it was bandy, it was, you know, all these stuff that we do in Sweden growing up, right? And so when I first started Hatha Yoga, when they had just started Hatha Yoga studio in Stockholm called Scandinavian Yoga and Meditation, and that was, I went there because I had busted out my foot, basically, and it was in the sham. So, and right away it was a healing effect on me, but in my practice, I haven't done a lot of injury to myself because of this experience, I think. So, yeah, it's in many ways, it's been, pain-free. In other ways, I think when you work your body, you have to expect things to happen. And I think that once again comes from the sports background and all of that, that I don't go in and think that nothing's going to happen in yoga class. It's like you walking outside and you're never going to trip. I think that's impossible throughout a lifetime.
Yeah, so it helps that you have had previous experience with working your body in different ways, yeah. And then you know how to protect yourself. But on the other hand, you have the acceptance of the fact that accidents might happen, and I mean, we can control them, but not that much, right? There is an element of risk to the practice. So probably if we go with that attitude into the practice, then it helps us,
yeah,
enjoy it more and stay more connected and be less shocked. Cool.
And I guess on this one, because you mentioned you've already, like, you know, you've been a sportsman your entire life, do you practice, or like, do you regularly do any other sports right now on top of yoga? Like, how do you marry maybe yoga with other things, if you do?
I did 1 hour session at the gym before I came home and had lunch and then started talking to you guys. So the answer is yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I teach, you know, in MISO program 6 days a week 5 days on Mysore mornings from 6 to 9:30, then 5:30 to 7:30 Monday and Wednesday evening, and 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday nights. So I lift and help and assist a lot of people. So I gotta protect myself. The number one thing is, of course, my Ashtanga yoga practice. You can't be teaching Ashtanga yoga and not practice. It's not credible. It's just you have to do that. But in order for me to take care of my body, with helping people in whether that's a Supta Kurmasana or Marichasana D or Kapotasana or a lot of drop backs, I have to take care of my body. And I might not look it, and I definitely don't act it, but I turn 55 in October, so I'm an old dude.
No, you don't look it.
Thank you, but
that's for damn sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But the thing is, you don't want to lose muscle mass when you get older, right?
And yeah, you lose it anyway. By getting older, so we need to do our best to keep as much of it as possible, and at least train what we have.
Yes, exactly.
Because it'll go away with age anyway. So
yeah, so I think it's super important. It works for me. I'm not saying that it works for everybody else that are teaching yoga, but for me, I mean, I get on my bike during the summer and think that I'm in the peloton of the Tour de France. I love that. I started running again because I grew up doing track and field. So about, I would say 3-4 years ago, I started running. I try to do that a couple of times a week. So yeah, for me, it's just more about being fit, getting older, you know, and taking care of my body. Then again, like I said, the yoga practice is the number one thing, right, for me. So that's always going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes sense, right? Because you want to, let's say, be functional, right, into the old age. You want to be able to function and, you know, live your life and enjoy it and have, you know, a long health span, right, rather than just lifespan. So
you want to be mobile, and I think you get the mobility and agility much more in Ashtanga setting than at the gym. I mean, there's people doing a lot of calisthenics and stuff like that, and mobility, which is really great. But for me, I just love practicing and being a student of this practice. Yeah.
You know, all of this, whoever is into yoga is aware that the Ashtanga yoga practice is quite an athletic and a dynamic type of yoga. So you need a lot of energy to put into it. But at the same time, you extract a lot of energy right after the practice or because of the practice. And you mentioned this, and then you mentioned all of the other things that you're doing to keep your body sane and healthy and happy and fit. And for some of us out there, all of this might seem a bit intimidating. So I was wondering what advice would you have for individuals who are new to yoga and might feel a bit intimidated by it or are unsure where to begin?
I mean, since Ashtanga yoga is my love, I mean, granted, I was lucky to have a really great Hatha yoga teacher in Los Angeles. Her name is Catherine McNamara, and I talked about her before. But she also did practice Ashtanga yoga and had a really deep understanding of Hatha as well. And so she was great with sequencing. So I kind of got formed right away of working in intelligent sequencing. And that's kind of what I got when I started Ashtanga yoga as well. So I think the number one thing is that people find consistency, whether that is 2 days a week or 3 days a week and 4 days a week. You know, you slowly build up. So you can't, there's people in Ashtanga yoga and in other methods, of course, that they treat yoga as an addiction. And I don't think that's healthy. It's you're supposed to have energy left. You're not supposed to be totally spent and dead after your practice. You're supposed to be able to be a householder. You're supposed to be able to to go and have, be a normal colleague at an office job. If that's not the case, then something is not correct with the practice. You've been practicing too long, too hard, the wrong method for you.
Or you're
So
not
there's.
adding enough fuel to it, maybe,
You're
to
not.
fuel your practice. You're not eating correctly, you're not sleeping
Oh,
right,
yeah.
and
Of course, of course, of course. All
it
that
might be the
matters.
case.
Of course, all that matters. And that's highly individual how much and what, you need to eat and how much you need to sleep and all of that stuff. But all these things, I feel like that get calibrated and you get an insight to that when you're practicing yoga. You, 'cause I mean, that's one of the main purposes for ourselves is to know ourselves. But this changes throughout your life, I think, depending on your age, sometimes what season, you might be, you have a different body in spring compared to dead winter, right?
That too. And for women, it's also different because we have a different monthly cycle than men. So we have different levels of energy throughout one calendar month. And yeah, there is a lot of elements that we need to correlate and to have the right expectations from our body, I would say.
That too. That too.
So probably a sound advice for the beginner would be just take it easy, listen to your body.
Take it easy and listen to your body, but also learn how to pick a good teacher. I think that's extremely, that's one of those things. A lot of people, they take somebody close by or, they get recommended. But I think it's really important that you connect with the person that's gonna teach you yoga. It's the same thing as if you have the opportunity to sort of pick your workplace, your job, make sure it's a good boss, make sure it's a good job. It's the same thing when it comes to your PT at the gym. Pick a good PT that you like, that you enjoy, that I think is very important. So
Yeah.
do your due diligence when, even when you pick your yoga teacher.
Do
'Cause
your
there's a lot
research.
of there's a lot of yoga teachers out there. Not everyone is great or great for you.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, right? We're all different individuals, different way of connecting, so no one is for everyone, right?
No, that would be scary.
Would be a bit, yeah. And I guess talking about all things yoga, and talking about beginners maybe, or people that have never even tried yoga, right? Let's say just anyway, almost never heard of it. Could you maybe describe yoga from your perspective, from to those people? So like if you had to do, I don't know, an elevator pitch of what yoga is, what would you say?
Well, I think it's one of the sharpest, best tools to learn about yourself and who you are in this lifetime. Connecting to the true self. If we're not our body, we're not our thoughts, we're not our emotions, what then are we? And yoga, together with meditation, other modalities as well, like Tai Chi, Qigong. I mean, all of these are great tools to go beyond and really figure out what we are. So I think that's the people, everybody talks about yoga as union and self-realization. Yeah, sure. I agree with all of that, but I think it's a great tool to get to know yourself. And then for me, I think it has to do about what have you done in previous lifetimes as well. So my understanding of yoga will be very different from somebody else's understanding of yoga. I can give you tools and tips and say, read this book and that book, but can I fully explain what yoga is to you? I'm not 100% sure about that. I think that is an experience that needs to be for you, that you need to find within yourself. This is where words become very, very hard to transmit and translate, because it's something that happens within each and every individual. But I think it goes this way, it goes that way, it goes this way, it goes that way.
Yeah, it's multifaceted.
Extremely.
And also because you said, you know, yoga helps you to know yourself, right? So that's going to be individual, what yes. it will mean to you,
yeah.
how you, yeah. yeah. But you said something there that I caught on, and maybe you want to, if you want to talk more about it a bit, you said what you did in other lifetimes, mm-hmm. which I found very intriguing. So I was going to ask you maybe if you want to talk a bit more about that.
Sure. I mean, it's pretty obvious that I believe that there's a God or there's light or whatever, something bigger than what meets the eye. And I do believe we reincarnate. I do believe in karma. So with that being said, are you a soul that wants to learn, or you're a soul that's running away, kind of a thing? I think a lot of people that are drawn to yoga, at least they're trying to do something. I'm not mm-hmm. sure that everybody is maybe learning what they should, but I think that's also part of the journey. I think we have lifetimes where we don't learn all that much. I think there's lifetimes where we learn a lot, maybe. And then you can also avoid fully. I mean, but at some point you're going to be forced to look at your bank accounts and see what you've added up. That's my firm belief.
And is this influenced by yoga? Did you have this belief before yoga?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was before.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've been pondering these things since I was a small child. So.
Big questions since you were a small kid.
Yeah. Annoying to the people around me, I can tell you that.
I mean, it's always good to have questions, right? That's how you get to know different things.
Yeah, sometimes not.
And it's good to find yourself a community that really gets your beliefs and emotions and really understands what you're saying. So connecting with other yogis is, I personally find something that's extremely helpful, because maybe non-yoga practitioners or non-yogis or people who are not interested yet into yoga or don't have the interest to understand it, they don't really vibe on the same frequency, right?
No.
So therefore... No. I, you know, I'm also interested personally in this universal aspect of yoga, because, of course, everybody knows, and I know that you're one of the most experienced and senior yoga teachers in Sweden and possibly the world. But and of course, you teach all over the world.
Let's keep it to Sweden.
Europe, when it comes to Ashtanga. Can I have Europe, please?
Sure. Have Europe.
All right. Thank you.
There's been quite a few people ahead of my generation of
absolutely.
Ashtanga practitioners. Okay.
Absolutely. But... Yeah, so let's refer to Europe, but at the same time, your teaching experience refers to, you know, is global, and you teach all over the world, including in retreats. Mm-hmm. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts on whether yoga really universal, and how is the cultural component influencing your teachings? How are you adapting your methods, attitudes, adjustments, satsangs, whatever, to different cultures, or if it's the case?
The answer is I don't. I don't adapt.
So you're just being yourself?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter whether we teach in India or we teach in Italy or in the States or in China. I'm gonna be me, but I must say, first time maybe teaching in India with Indian students, that felt a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
On because it's just like, well, you know, they have it in their mother's milk a lot of times. But then
in
again,
their bones.
Yeah. But then again, we have quite a few Indian students here in Stockholm at our program. And a couple of them, you know, they've been like, David, you know more about yoga than I do, and I grew up in India. So it's kind of nice to get that feedback as well. So, And as long as they are okay with what I do, then they should practice with me. And if there's other teachers, if they, they're online these days, right? So you can study with anyone that you kind of want to. Yeah. So I think it's one that goes back to that again. Find a good teacher that you like. But no, I try not to change who I am, whether I'm in China or whether I'm in Italy. It doesn't matter to me.
So it's important to stay true to yourself as a teacher and to your methods, you would say.
I think it's dangerous when you start trying to appease other people or cultures. I think you come off at once again not being so authentic. And I think for me, I get frustrated when it's the same thing sometimes with social media. You can kind of tell that is this just a facade, So I think in any field of life, you try to be as close to who you are, and that of course changes throughout your years and your careers. So I'm sure if you it doesn't matter who you talk to who's ever been teaching some kind of subject in their life, I'm sure what they said 5 years ago doesn't apply to what they say today or 10 years ago. And once again, you have to kind of be smart about who you pick, both in as a yoga teacher and on social media and all of this, because there's a lot of facades and a lot of faces. And I think also if we're talking a little bit about beginners, that sometimes beginners, they see something on Instagram and they assume that that is yoga, and that there's some super bendy girl doing a backbend or some extreme pose for 1 second that a really great photographer is able to snap or video for, because they and you for me, I can tell that, yeah, they can do this one pose, but they don't have a practice. And I think it's extremely important that a yoga teacher has a practice, whether that's a hatha yoga teacher, vinyasa, whatever they do, whatever method. If you don't have a teacher that isn't practicing, they shouldn't be teaching, and they should not have students. So,
Plain and simple.
yes.
But I think that's what sells, right? On social media, like if you are super bendy and you are in whatever pretzel pose, that is going to get way more engagement than if you just sit there in a meditation,
And fully
pose. So,
clothed. And fully
yes.
clothed.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yeah. The less clothes, the better.
Right. Although I think there's a topic there, but maybe we're going on tangents here. Like obviously yoga is like you should be like you with yourself, right? So maybe clothes aren't important in that in that aspect, right? Could maybe make that argument. Anyway, we were talking about I guess sports and combining yoga with sport and so on. And I kind of want to go back a bit to that, but talking about nutrition. So, maybe what's your approach to, to nutrition for like health and wellness purposes? And is that something that you kind of combine with your teachings in terms of yoga or no?
No.
No.
Don't talk and preach to people about what they should eat and not eat. I find that when people get into yoga and they kind of really get into yoga, they start, most people, maybe they start drinking less alcohol. Maybe they stop smoking cigarettes. Then they start maybe eating less junk food or candy or whatever they have as a vice. And then they start maybe moving into more organic foods. So I think you don't have to preach that. I've had maybe I don't know, three, four discussions, five maybe throughout the years, where people have asked me specifically about dietary stuff. But usually I don't have to talk to them about that at all.
It kind of happens naturally, yeah, right? You mentioned.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So we're kind of adjusting what we eat and our habits to sustain our body more for the practice, or maybe the consistent practice prevents us from craving all that
Most
junk,
definitely.
Or balancing our addictions, or
Because the thing is, when you have a regular practice, there's certain things that you eat. Like there's certain things that, oh, I want to eat this, and when I eat it, I feel like my body just tells me
so
like,
this is
just like, but I'm still stuck here in the mind of a memory of something that, oh, I think this is so good, and then it's like, why did I go for that? So, no. Lurgan and I never go into that, like, you should be vegan, you should be vegetarian, because I think that is also, it's a personal choice, and it changes throughout people's lives as well. So I think people tread on very dangerous waters when they start pointing fingers. And I mean, I know colleagues in my business that are pinching people's, you know, love handles, and you know, to me that is just like that happens, and to me that's just like, that's disgusting, you know. Or just say you have to be vegan, you know, which I'm like, yeah, that works for some
people. Of us.
Doesn't work for everyone. And if it doesn't work, what are you, less of a human being because of that? Are you, you know,
less of a yogi?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah and vegan is this whole belief to you know, stop to as much as possible not hurt other beings, right?
Great sentiment.
But those other beings could also be human beings, right? So if it's detrimental to you, then yeah.
And I've met quite a few vegans that are extremely passive aggressive and not very nice human beings, so the veganism didn't help them. Exactly. So, you know, but I know I'm going to get busted in the comments for this, which is, I'm okay with that.
It's fine. I think all groups, right, have their own, like their extremes, right? There's always going to be someone extreme. So there's going to be a vegan that is extreme and whatever.
Yeah. But they're going to start throwing ahimsa at you, and which, once again, don't throw the eight limbs at somebody. The eight limbs are for you, you know, not to be thrown at somebody else, whether, you know, yama or niyama. Just don't, these are observances for yourself to adhere to, and we do our best. I mean, I've been vegan for periods of time, as I've been raw vegan for periods of time. It has not worked consistently for me, for my body, in the climate that I live.
Yeah, it's quite different from person to person,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
By the way, no connection with anything much, but you mentioned the climate, and I remember that many years ago I used to visit Stockholm quite frequently due to my job back then.
Okay.
And
what did you do?
Oh, I worked for Ericsson, actually.
Oh wow! All right. Well, that's a
first,
big company.
Yeah, there were just work trips. And I went to Yogayama once.
Ah.
Yes.
To La Ruga? To me?
No, no. La Ruga was so... It was what? She was there, what, 5 a.m., 6 a.m.? It was not something that I was able to try, I'm afraid, at that point. But I went to a different class.
Okay.
And I'm just curious, are you guys still faithful and loyal and always there when you're in Sweden? I mean, are you still...
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. That's where we don't teach any other at any other studio.
That's what I was going with the question. Yeah. So that's your go-to place.
I mean, I do some company gigs. I have privates that are outside of Yogayama, and then I have privates inside of Yogayama. But no, this is home for us in Stockholm in Sweden. I mean, I've been a few places outside of Stockholm to teach, but yeah, no, that's, you can't, when you teach as much as I do, you can't really run around to other studios.
Yeah, you can't really be that mobile, right?
No. And I'm
with your full practice and all the other practices.
Yeah. I mean, at some point it comes down to scheduling too, right? Yeah. You know, if I would be having to run around the city to a different studio, to over here, it's quite exhausting, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. And which leads me actually to my next question, because I know you've had corporate jobs mm-hmm. for many years, and I'm wondering whether you still have a full-time job and how are you intertwining your, you don't. All right. Oh, that must be a relief.
Yeah, that was very nice. I did go back to do a key account manager job during the pandemic, but mm-hmm. and the only good thing about that was that Laruga wasn't traveling as much. I mean, we did still travel. Yeah. You know, there were, you know, pockets of times where we did retreats, or she did retreats. But she came back and was teaching a couple of days a week, which was really good fun for all of us, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, she always, when she's in town, she, you know, she tries to go to Yogayama and practice every morning as much as possible. You know, sometimes she, you know, she comes from a late flight. Of course, she's not going to get up the day after. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but at least, you know, so she does some workshops, you know, at Yogayama. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the extent of it. Yeah. No, so no more corporate jobs. I have other things outside that I'm doing that are more business stuff that I'm trying to get off the ground. So, but I kind of had it with office gigs. It's nothing that I aspire to anymore.
That's relatable.
Yeah, I would like to maybe get out of office
gigs. It's relatable gigs at some point. For us as well.
But you were and I know that but I know the style you are teaching right now isn't necessarily catered to online classes. But I was going to ask, do you see yourself at any point switching, or not switching completely to online, but like adding an online class? I don't know, because everybody's online these days. And obviously the reach is, you know, bigger, obviously, because you're like, yeah.
I am not a big fan. I've had a few privates online, because they've come to retreats, and some of them, like Monica, have gone to business trips to Stockholm, so they practice live with us at the studio. Then it kind of works. The only thing that I will do is get, you know, at some point, Laruga has her own online studio now, right? So that will be something at some point where I'll record probably the classes for that. I might do a live event for that. But me on my own, no. I'm trying to not teach so much. I'm trying to quit.
But I have a question, because I also
Before that, sorry Monica, to cut you off, but you just said you want to quit, so I just kind of like, hold on, so you want to quit and do what? What's your plan?
My other business stuff, you know, a little bit more music, but also I like being Laruga's sidekick. That's probably the most fun, is when we kind of teach together, you know. I don't want to go on everything, because that's like, that's not me either, but it's really nice when we get to do that. Like when we, now we did a 1 month retreat at Purple Valley in Goa. So I mean, that's super nice.
Yeah. Sounds beautiful.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
It also kind of answered my question, because the question was about partnerships in yoga, and how do you feel, how do you approach, you know, what's the difference between the retreat or an initiative, an endeavor, whatever that's yoga related, and that you do on your own, by yourself, and something that you co-lead together with Laruga, and how does that work out for you guys?
We don't do a lot of co-leading. When I'm with Laruga, we have her as the, she's the head teacher. And What I end up doing a lot is that I take care of beginners. Like, I kind of really focus on getting the beginners going. I mean, but then of course, LaRouge also wants me to help out with the other stuff, but we have to divvy it up a little bit. I mean, because our teachings are very like, we're very different, but we're also very like minded in our approach and what to do. So there's never, you know, I know what she likes me to do when it comes to helping students, and we see eye to eye on, I would say, 90% of the things, if not more. So it's very simple. I mean, there are certain yoga couples, for lack of a better word, but you know, that co-teach. We might do a little bit more of that in the future, but I think it kind of works better when one is it gets more focused, it gets more pointed, actually. And I kind of like the way we set things up, that I kind of take care of the beginners more and really lay that foundation. And then she kind of works a little bit more with people with more experience, so...
Yeah, so you have found out through the years that this is what works best for you guys.
Yeah, and when I teach alone, I do my thing. I get to do what I do, you know, which is not too far away from LaRouge, but there's different word, you know, different way of describing things, maybe.
Cueing.
Yeah, cueing, different flows, that kind of a thing, you know. But I mean... Cool. We're both students of Sharat, so, you know, that also seeps in there. And then, you know, she had so much more experience when she had, you know, at least a 10-year head start in Ashtanga when I first started. So there's, you know, me trying to catch up, that's not going to work. And my body, I'm not one of these super bendy, flexible dudes in the sense that I'm doing third or fourth series. That's not going to happen in this lifetime, you know. So
it's the case for many of us.
Yeah. Most of us.
For more than those who actually get to dwell on to deep dive into the third or fourth series.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm doing my intermediate stuff, and maybe hopefully one day when I stop teaching, I can be a student again only, and then maybe I can go deeper in and further in, maybe possibly finish intermediate, but I would have to really not teach, I would say.
In order for you to dedicate fully or have more time
to do that. Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing. That's very insightful and enlightening. So thank you.
Cool.
But I think also on this, so you said, yeah, I want to kind of give up teaching or find a way, right, and focus on other things. But you still want to practice yoga.
Of course,
but I guess my question is, do you think there's anything that would stop you at some point from practicing? Do you think that could be?
No. No, I came to this practice for myself. I went to Mysore for myself. Some people think that I started yoga because I met LaRouge. No, I started way before I even knew she, you know, existed. So, I mean, I was barely 20 the first time I went into Hatha yoga, right? So, no, I mean, we met in Mysore. That's how we met. So, for me, I will always practice for me, and I love being a student and going deeper and deeper and deeper within. And the fact is, I mean, if you do something for 5-6 days a week, you will become better at it, especially if you don't, you know, have a time restriction that I have to be this good in this amount of years. If you really take it as Patabi suggests or any yoga teacher suggests, don't matter the method, it's a lifetime practice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not stressed out, you're not trying to be somewhere, and you do something for 5-6 years or 5-6 days a week, you're going to become better at it. How far I will go with asana, I don't know. But I can always go deeper in. And that's the most exciting, interesting part, I think. Especially Indeed. With Ashtanga yoga, which it's so funny since it seems to be so physical. But you can't do the physical part only without at least treading inward. Some people are very gifted physically, but at some point they're going to meet up against a rub as well. Huh. I mean, that's why there are four, you know, there's fourth series and fifth series and sixth series. At some point, they're going to meet up against some resistance and have to breathe, have to focus, you know, yeah. So.
And work through it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed. So true. But yeah, practice and all is coming. I mean, if consistency is there, progress will be there.
Yeah. So. It's a little bit simplistic, but I the sentiment for sure, practice and all is coming. But I think that you have to see that in all aspects of life, not to the asana practice. And I think that's something that people kind of took, they ran with it, and I'm not sure they fully understand what Patabi meant with that. I'm not sure that I'm interpreting it the way he, you know, intended it to be. But for me, practice and all is coming, that is 24/7 for the rest of your life in all aspects of being a human, fully embodied being. So that is not only an hour and a half to 2 hours on a yoga mat.
Yeah, so it goes way beyond asana practice, right?
For me, that phrase does that. But mm-hmm. I think for some people, that phrase just comes to, oh, now I can catch heels in Kapotasana. Awesome. You know.
Success. Achievement yes. unlocked.
But I think yoga, if you do practice yoga, so to speak, and you look into the beliefs of yoga, right, it kind of bleeds outside the mat, if that makes sense, because yeah, yeah, you yeah. kind of, you know, like, you know, the yamas and niyamas and all that, right? It's, you can't just do it. You can, but it will kind of influence you in your life. So it will be to your point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think some people can do it really for just the physical aspect and not do a whole lot without of that. But, I mean, LaRuga and I talk about this and we say this, you know, it's an analogy, you know, when you jump into the pool, everybody gets sweat, right? But we don't know how, you know, some people, they stay at the surface. Other people go a little bit down. Some people go all the way down to the bottom. So it's like, who are you? You will definitely take something with you from the yoga mat, no matter what style, I think. So whether that's being more conscious about your breath, you know, maybe you learn how to concentrate a little bit better. Maybe you are not so quick to react to certain things when you get irritated and all of that stuff. I mean, that has helped me so much. For me, that's been a blessing. But I'm far from perfect in that department. But I would be more of a disaster if I didn't have yoga and meditation in my life. I know that for a fact. But I had to do a deep dive within myself with psychotherapy for a long, long time. I mean, I couldn't. There were so many things with me that was broken that couldn't only be fixed by yoga. I had to do other things.
But it becomes this, I think, for me at least, from my personal practice, it's almost surprising, right? You start with the physical, more or less, at least that's been my experience. And then it's almost surprising to your point, like, oh, I can breathe better, or I can focus better, or it's almost surprising just how many things yoga can help you improve.
Yeah, without you even thinking about it when you go to your first yoga class.
Exactly. You're like, I'm just going to whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Build some muscle. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
I'm going to get flexible. So I become a better runner, or my golf swing improves, or whatever the reason is. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then you're like, oh, okay. But other things are happening.
Yeah.
So I think that's really nice. Maybe shifting completely topics a bit, but still yoga. Why do you think, and this has been our kind of this is our opinion, obviously, so maybe you don't agree with it, but basically, we feel that there are more women practicing yoga than men. And I guess the question is simple, maybe the answer not necessarily. Why do you think there are more women in yoga than men, from your perspective as a guy?
Oh, I'm gonna get so
And the
busted on
teacher,
this one.
and you're gonna
Oh,
get
Lord.
what?
I'm gonna get so busted for this.
Oh, please
Oh,
speak
Lord.
up.
The simple answer is there's not enough dudes teaching yoga. And the people that have been in media a lot of times has not been inspiring to regular guys that wants to do yoga. And they still think sitting in Padmasana, cross-legged, is yoga. They think that, which we know is a preparation pose for breathing exercises or meditation, and And when you have feminine guys in media, it's not going to attract a whole lot of dudes that started playing ice hockey when they were 6 years old, 5 years old, or they've been riding dirt bikes. It's just you got to have some good, real men that are role models that guys can, they got to be able to identify. And then there's another thing with guys, I think sometimes that, it's easy for them to pick up a football or a soccer ball or whatever, or jump or run. And in yoga, they're not necessarily going to be good or the best or the greatest when they come in. And they start shaking in downward dog, and sweat is coming all over. And the girls are like, looking very elegant in general compared to the guys. So there's a much higher threshold, I think, for guys. Unless you were a guy that maybe did gymnastics, did taekwondo, you've done these kind of more martial arts, dance, gymnastic kind of movements when there's a type of mobility in there. Then that becomes something that's maybe easier to go into yoga. So I think
But how, yeah, sorry.
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, just linking into what you said earlier, like you need real dudes to promote it, to get real dudes to practice it. How do you get the real dudes to promote it, practice it, and teach it in the first place?
Person by person, I think it really it is we have a lot of guys in our program at Yogayama comparatively. And I think a lot of it has to do with LaRuga and me starting this together. And then I started teaching a little bit, and we had some male teachers there that were great. So people saw it, then it becomes word of mouth. And then slowly, slowly, people get a little bit, interested in that. But I think it's a lot of times, if you have a guy that is super bendy, catching his ankles in Urdhva Dhanurasana, you have that on Instagram. How many hockey players, how many football players, how many, dudes that ride motorcycles are going to identify with that and be like, yeah, I want to do that? No.
Yeah, I think both insights are extremely valid, and I can totally see this in my country, which is Romania. I mean, of course, Alex is also Romanian, but she's been living in London for so many years. I'm still in Bucharest, and I can see this in the sense that we have our fair share of very masculine, manly, testosteronic male figures being international yoga superstars, right? On one hand. On the other hand, you don't have such thing in my country, and we can totally see this. At the same time, yoga is gets more adepts, gets more selling points if it is being taught by a nice blonde, blue-eyed, white girl, maybe, rather than, I don't know, some bald guy who's 2 meters tall, like my friend here in Bucharest. So of course he would love to have his classes full, right? But maybe there's more that's contributing to that. You know, maybe it's yoga is easier to be sold by females rather than males. I mean, yeah, it depends. It largely depends on the culture as well, I would say. But yeah, let's just hope more men get into yoga.
I mean, it's a great, it's a great compliment to whatever sport that you're doing also, whether you're golfing, whether you're a
Course.
surfer. There's a lot of surfers, there's a lot of people that climbers that do Ashtanga yoga, for example, right? So I mean, there's certain pockets of the outdoors or the sports that has found, yoga being very helpful. So I think slowly it will get there, but I think the fact also that some people don't think it's that they're not training, I think it's just, that's another thing that they don't think that, that you're working out, or and I think that's very sad. But it depends on how it's portrayed, that
Yeah,
it's not fully
they don't see it.
manly,
Yeah, and they also don't have the openness or the curiosity to comprehend that it's actually a great complement to whether you're golfing, hiking, biking, playing tennis, running, or swimming, or whatever else. Also, men are so competitive and so self-conscious when it comes to being performative, right? Most of you guys see yoga as being very performative. So, oh, I cannot do that. I cannot do that. Maybe I shouldn't be here at all if I can't do it, right? So that's where the,
So that's a mindset that needs to be changed for men. But I mean, I think it just overall in society today, we need a lot of good role models, a lot of healthy males that are allowed to be 100% males, and where women are not scared of men, and also guys not being afraid of being vulnerable, having emotions. And but it you got to have men, real men, to raise boys as well, right? So that's like all over, it's all over society. There's a lack of really great men, but women hasn't helped the cause either a lot of times.
Yeah, we can see that more and more now.
I think now you really can see it, unfortunately, where it's just like women need to step out of the way and let men raise boys and let women raise girls, and then we don't have to have a war in between the sexes.
Yeah, and we have the balance and the equanimity that we also need and crave and rather collaborate and be united rather than be at war, as you say, because we kind of are at war more and more.
And it's stupid, it's insane. It's just like, let's work on people's, let's work on the strength of the female, let's work on the strength of the male, and that's good. But don't try to make women have male attributes or the other way around. All of that is confusing and not good at all. Because then you get offshoots of that where it's extreme, it's the super masculine, like really, really, which is just like, yeah, but you're just an insecure person trying to make up for a bunch of shit that you actually aren't. So stop with that, because no one believes you. And same thing with women, right?
It goes back to that those extremes, right? In every group or every whatever it is, right? There's going to be those extremes. And to your point, the more extreme one side is, the more extreme the other side becomes to reply to that, right?
But we can't walk around and being afraid of our assets. There's certain things that women are great at and that they will gravitate at towards naturally. Celebrate that. The same thing with men. Celebrate that. And I think we would have less wars and a lot of other conflicts if we just allow that. But I'm
Yeah,
not doing
but
it.
oh. No, go for it. Sorry.
No, I say I think we will get there. I'm talking about as humans. I'm talking about we will get there. It will take time, but we will get there as a human race, I think.
Well, that's hopefully we can be united. But I was going to say, yeah, to what you're saying, you know, leaning into your strengths, right, as men and women. But at the same time, if it's something like if you're there's always going to be, I think there's always been like more masculine women and more feminine men and whatever, right? As long that
Great.
comes, yeah,
Yeah, but
like a natural thing.
yeah, because I mean, if everybody would be on, I think it's nice with that we have a spectrum, but everybody in that spectrum needs to be heard and seen, and you know, there, I, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're gay or you're a man that has more feminine traits. You can still be a real human being, and you should not be suffering because you might be more of a feminine man or you might be more of a masculine woman. It's just like, yeah, that's your part in God's creation. Great. Let's celebrate that. Because now we also have the confusion of yeah, don't even let me get into to all of that, but I think we just complicated things for us instead of accepting and trying to see who people are. And I mean, that's also part of the way I teach. I try to actually understand who stands in front of me and try to understand that person, because teaching is not about me, it's about the student. I mean, we try to, LaRue and I always talk about that. It's about the student. It's student based. I mean, Laruga is a superstar in her own right, cause of her practice. But she's a great teacher and she loves to teach. So when she teaches, it's not about her. It's 100% about the student. She, you know, I think that those things are very important to remember.
Yeah, of course, and luckily we have yoga as this tool that allows us to come up as whoever we are, and however fit or unfit or different or flexible or inflexible we are, because yoga embraces us no matter what, right? So
yeah, well, that's
lucky
the way
in
it
that
should
sense.
That's the way it should be. I mean, if you go to our MISER program, or you know, not only our, but you know, you will see some people that are very thin. And you will see some people that are on the rounder side and taller and shorter and, you know, both men and women. But everybody has a place there and feels welcome, because otherwise they wouldn't have the guts to walk into the room.
Of course.
Yeah. And I think there's many places like that around the world.
Most of them should be all welcoming, right? All embracing and all inclusive.
Yeah.
And yeah,
yeah.
But it's an art to truly try and see the person and downsize your ego, and see the person who's in front of you and teach adapting yourself to who they are, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We try, at least.
And I guess on that note, of a topic that probably could go on for hours, I guess maybe David, to close this session, so to speak, this chat. Coming back to yoga, but coming back to maybe projects, or is there like, I don't know, are there any projects or initiatives or anything that you're like kind of excited for in the next period that you want to share with
no,
everyone?
I think I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with LaRuga's online studio. I mean, otherwise it's the workshops and the program that we run. Even though it's a MISER program and it has its, you know, we still try to develop it in one way by, you know, our presence and you know, as long as I teach, I'm just going to try to become better at it. Does that make sense? I just don't want to walk in and be like, you know, do it half-ass, you know, a little bit with one hand. So, I mean, and it's the same thing. I mean, Rugen and I always talk about after, you know, retreats or during a retreat, oh, I should have said something like that. And, or she'll be like, yeah, maybe talk about it in this way. Or, you know, we always have a little bit of feedback for one another. And I think that develops us. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not fun, maybe, but it might be some truth there. So, you know, it might be a bitter pill to swallow sometimes. But, hey, that's part of being alive and all of that. So I would say that there's a lot of things like that. But, I mean, there's times where, you know, we say things to each other. So.
Yeah, that's how you learn and grow, right? And develop yeah. through feedback, even though it's a hard pill to swallow at times, especially from, you know, from your partner in everything. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, but that's how you know, coming from them, that's how you know that you really need to put some thought into it, maybe, and really take it into consideration.
Yeah.
I would say. So, yeah. Right. We'll make sure we link your social media in our description so that everyone knows where to find you guys.
That would be great.
And I guess just touching on what you were just saying, David, with you guys being like teaching yoga and obviously being a couple, I think that's quite sweet, so to speak, that you managed to work together, be mm-hmm. together, and mm-hmm. still, you know, be together, right? Because mm-hmm. work and sometimes they don't, right? They don't mesh together to be like working with the same person that you're with, so to speak, right?
Yeah. No, but I think that's also why I have my music. I have some business things that she's not involved in that. And she has certain interested things that she's interested in and people that she talked to. I think it's important to have separate things so you can also come together on other aspects. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for this. It has been really lovely talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
And yeah, guys, this is us today. Don't forget to comment, like, and subscribe. And we'll see you next time in a new episode.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.